recording, so hey, I guess this is the BAMP podcast, and we're all together now. And joining us, as always, it seems to be, I'm Andrew, by the way, and with us is the one, the only, Walt Rebilliard. Say hi, Walt.
Hi, Walt.
Excellent. Also with us is the wonderful and talented Mr. Smith. Say hi, Mr. Smith.
Hello.
And last but not least is, I think this is your first time on the BAMP podcast, DT Sketch Butch Inno.
That would be great.
And, of course, Mike Lafferty is the normal host, and he is flitting about, but he's not with us right now. But he will be back in but a brief moment. So I guess we're starting this fun factory festival of fanaticism.
Let's do it.
That's the closest I can come to doing, you know, Marvel Stan Lee, you know, face front true believer crap. So that's enough of that.
So your fanboyness is amazing.
It is. It's astounding. We had a whole bunch of topics we had kicked around in email, as I recall, that we were going to talk about. One of the ones I really liked a lot was that we were going to debate the merits of Alan Moore. I really like this one a lot because it sort of harkens to a conversation Sketch and I had the other day about hack writers versus talented hacks versus actually good writers. And let's go around the room real quick talk each of us in turn about what we think of Alan Moore. And let's give it to the Pommy and let him start it all off, since it's a fellow countryman.
Thanks very much. Okay. What do we want to say about Alan Moore? I mean, I've read Alan Moore stuff back in the very, very old days. He did stuff for 2000 AD, which is like a British comic science fiction stuff. So I've read some very, very early Alan Moore stuff. And I always found him to be quite cool. I really like Watchmen. I really like Leeds with Extraordinary Gentlemen. Some of his indie stuff I've not read. But all in all, I think, you know, a thumbs up, to be honest. I mean, I can see he's. It's funny enough, he was just on The Simpsons today as well, which made me laugh my ass off, so that was quite good. Okay. But, I mean, the guy, I like the guy. I can see why he gets annoyed. I can see why people get annoyed with him in his overreactions or quoted overreactions. But, I think some good stuff has come from him. I can't deny that, for sure. Tom
Excellent.
Strong. Tom Strong. I love Tom Strong. The Alan Moore Tom Strong stories are brilliant. So.
That's from the ABC stuff, isn't it, the Tom Strong?
Yeah, way back. Yeah, but yeah, again, another character that got left behind by himself and wandered off into the wilderness. That early stuff, that was great stuff.
So we've got one vote, surprisingly, from the fellow countrymen that Alan Moore is top shelf, top notch. Walt, what do you think? What's your view on Mr. Moore?
I could take or leave. It depends on how he ends up coming across as far as all the different... all the different stories that he pitches. I mean, he obviously brings a definitive, grittier style story to the table. But I take him like I would take any other writer. If he writes well, I'll read it. If he writes, like I'm the king of the universe and that everything I say is gospel, then I'm not going to read it. So, you know, my take on it is he's hit or miss.
Fair enough. I like that. Concise, on point. All right, Sketch, here you go. Your first time to introduce yourself to the BAMF listeners and show them what you're all about. What's your take on Mr. Moore?
I'm not a huge fan. I didn't mind Watchmen. And I did mind a couple of the Superman stories, but for the most part, I'm actually pretty bored by him. V for Vendetta could have been a little bit better. His Leave Extraordinary Gentleman, I'm just not a fan, but that's also partially due to the art. I mean, I know we're reflecting on the writing, but...
Okay, Kevin O'Neill, yeah, he's a very, very... he did some early stuff for 2000 AD again, and he's very, very angular, and he takes a lot of getting used to. And I must say, it is a struggle for me. I've known his artwork for like 20, 25 years or whatever it is now, so I can see where they come from.
Yeah. It's it's very hard for me to read a comic book when I can't enjoy it as a whole. I can't enjoy the art and the writing. And... Alan Moore himself, I'm just not. I guess I'm not into the whole beard worship of Alan Moore. You know, I much rather worship at the beard of, say, someone like Jason Aaron, who I think is a much better writer than Alan Moore himself.
Interesting. Well, I'll give you my opinion on him. I'm pretty much in the same camp as Sketch and Walt on this one, in that I take them hit or miss. You know, some stuff's good, some stuff I don't like, I don't care for. The art, I'm the same way. A comic book has to be a complete product. I don't think you can get away with just having good writing and crap art, or, you know, great art and crap writing, as Image Comics certainly proved way back in the 90s. But I think with me, my big problem with Alan Moore, and here's where we get a little controversial, kids, is I look at him the same way I look at Jesus Christ. It's not him I have the problem with. It's the fans of him that I have the problem with. This blanket, you know, Alan Moore could take a dump and then write a poem about it. I think it's the most brilliant thing ever written. At some point, I understand his technical skill. I understand his strength. Sometimes it really works. Like everyone else, Stephen King, Mozart, you name it, people who are considered really tops in their field, they have off days, they create crap product. I just find that he's not held by the general comic book fan base to the same standards that other writers are held to. He's almost given a free pass a lot of the time, and I don't care for that.
Okay.
And now that I've completely silenced the room...
I can see where that's going from. I mean, I think a lot of the people that tend to regard him as a good writer, he was in the 80s era DC stuff. He wrote the last Superman story for whatever that series was.
Whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, that one. He wrote that. I like that. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But I like it because it's got that Silver Age edge to it, which I really like. And then they kind of discard it. Watchmen, I really liked. I've read his stuff. The From Hell was, I really like From Hell. The actual comic book, because it had lots of tie-ins to various things that happen over here in the UK, and you go, oh, okay, it's clever. But I don't know. I mean, I say, League is one of my favourite stuff, but I really like that Victorian kind of steampunky stuff anyway, so any comic book that can put that out and have quite an interesting story is pretty cool. But,
Well, you know, yeah, as a concept, I think the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is really cool. It's just the execution that I personally have a problem with.
I know, I can't remember now, I think it was Chris McLaughlin who were tearing into the Black Dossier book that came out, which was the hardcover, it was odd, it was strange, it had lots of weird crap in it, but it also had a reference to Jeeves and Wooster, so I mean, that was cool in my opinion.
One of the best Brian Laurie bits ever. Well, you know what? I think we all sort of are in the same ballpark on that. But while we're at it, let's talk about some other writers then that are considered to be fan favorites or hit or miss writers. And I'll pick one randomly off the top of my head: Chris Claremont. Anybody got any thoughts on
him? Yeah, his X-Men stuff back in the day was pretty much defining for them and for that franchise when he started introducing a lot of characters and even some villains that although are not staples of the X-Men franchise, you know, they're still, if you look at the past of what shaped that group, you know, Claremont's run was huge.
I agree with that. I think Byrne had a lot to do with that too, though. I think it is a team, much like, say, Wolfman and Perez were together. I think they really sort of helped each other out a lot more, because I can tell you, when Claremont wrote on his own without Byrne there, I found it not very good. I found it to be sort of, you know, I could see where Byrne was grounding him, where once he lost that ground, I felt like he was just, you know, off into the wild blue having as much fun as he could, but I didn't find it relatable or as interesting. You're right. They defined the X-Men. Hell, they defined Marvel Comics in the 80s, really.
Which is pretty much the X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Avengers kind of sucked for just a very long time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I remember my very first X-Men comic I ever picked up, which is Wolverine turned into a brood on the front cover drawn by Silverstreet, and I swear that is Claremont. All the way through that era with Silverstreet drawing stuff, all the way through the Siege Perilous stuff, the Australian Outback, loved that stuff.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah, the Australian Outback.
I really loved that era of X-Men. That was really good. And then obviously Jim Lee came in. You got Gambit and all that kind of stuff. And it's okay for enough. And I've got 20 years worth of X-Men comics in the boxes elsewhere, and most of that stuff is Claremont stuff. So
Yeah, I don't know. For me, after the Mutant Massacre, I really lost it for X-Men. I didn't enjoy it as much anymore. Well, I love the Mutant Massacre.
That's great
stuff. After that is where I feel it dropped off. I felt it really sort of just lost its wow factor.
Yeah. See, I'm possibly thinking about when they came out is when I read them. So, I mean, if I went back now and read them, maybe I would think the same. I don't honestly know. But back then, I mean, crikey, I'm a guy now that I get sick and tired of seeing Wolverine in every single team book, but back then Wolverine was the guy to be with. Yeah, hey, Wolverine's here! It was cool. So.
Yeah, exactly. The Marvel Universe should just rename itself Wolverine and those other guys.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to pull off those sideburns, so anybody who can really do it should get props.
That's true.
Yeah, really. And by the way, you know, you guys are missing your golden opportunity here to trash Canada, as you so often like to do on these Banff podcasts. So, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all in good fun, Andrew. We love you.
Yeah.
And this is Mike Lafferty. I'm back now because my babysitter is showing up. So,
yay! Oh. I don't have to MC anymore. I'm so happy. Now I can be obnoxious.
Wait a minute. Did that stop?
I'm glad somebody said that.
Yeah. You two, how's your bromance working out there, Sketch and Walt? Is it going okay for you?
I'm thinking about growing a goatee, actually.
Awesome. It's like hanging out with Tony Stark and Bruce Banner, man. It's just... I often feel like Captain America in this equation, let me tell you.
Oh, hey, there's a really great... fan fiction comic called American Captain. It's like Steve Rogers' journal comic. And
I've seen also, that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really well written, and it's, you know, it's not an action comic. It's more like Man Out of Time, you know, dealing with the modern world. But it's clever and well written, and I want to mention it on the podcast. So,
100%.
Hey, what did I miss? Were you guys just trashing Alan Moore while I was away, or what happened?
Debating the finer points.
Yeah, the general consensus was that he's hit or miss on his stories. Andrew has said that his poops are not magical. And last but not least, his fans are really, like, his big devout fans are really what ruin Alan Moore for a lot of us.
Let me ask you, does Neil Gaiman get the same kind of pass?
What's that?
Well, I mean, we're talking about Alan Moore gets a lot of people at home the same standard. Now, I'm a big Neil Gaiman fan. I mean, I've got all of his books, but and some of his superhero work just isn't that great, like 1602 and some of the other stuff he's done. But it seems like he kind of, you know, has a halo effect. He can do no wrong.
Okay, so what about, right, so you've read Sandman, correct?
Well, I got the full run outside my long box, yeah.
Yeah, see, I've got the full run and then the Absolute Editions as well. Sandman's the greatest thing I've ever read ever. But Gaiman, apart from a few stuff like the Neverwhere TV series and stuff like that, I have actually never read any Neil Gaiman stuff outside of the comics genre. So my Neil Gaiman is literally Sandman and nothing else, apart from the Doctor Who episodes, which I'm not too sure about. So
you should read Good Omens.
Yes, I've heard very good things about Good Omens. Every time someone, obviously Pratchett as well. So I can see where that would be. Be a good thing to look into.
Does it surprise anybody else that Neil Gaiman is British? I mean, you know.
Well, come on! Every time I go British, I can help. Most of the writers are cool British people.
hang on. Wait. So far, Smith likes more Claremont and Gaiman. UK, okay, UK, take, UK.
Just wait till you bring up Grant Morrison. I'll say
I was about to. Grant Morrison. What about Grant Morrison? The man,
I like Grant Morrison.
Shocking. I can't stand Grant Morrison. I cannot stand him.
Jim, just in the book thread that you did not like to take on.
I'm sorry, say that again, please?
Did you just not like the take on established characters, or is it just something that you just, in general, you don't like and think he writes?
Sketch, that's directed to you, buddy.
Well, excuse me, please. Losing my voice here. I think the problem I have more with Morrison, to be honest, I would actually read Alan Moore before I read Morrison. There's something about the pretentiousness in the way he writes and in the way that he talks during interviews and everything like that really turned me off from him. He's just not the go-to guy, I guess, when it comes to writing. Whenever I see that he writes something, I've read enough of his stuff. I have Earth 2. I have a lot of his Justice League stuff. I have some of his Batman stuff. I hated his X-Men run. I absolutely hated his X-Men run. And it's really too bad because I really like Phil Jimenez as an artist.
My big problem with Morrison is that he doesn't really bring any kind of emotional impact to his characters. I think he's best when he's writing old legacy characters that you already have an emotional investment in, like the Justice League. But I think when he's working with, you know, either his own stuff or characters I'm not as invested in, he doesn't really bring any kind of dialogue or character interaction that I can really connect with. He's just kind of, you know, mad, interesting ideas, which is great, but there's kind of an emotional component that's always missing.
I would tend to agree and disagree with you on that one, depending on where he is in his drug addiction. I find when he starts, he's really interesting and he does some great stuff. And then as he gets further and further into his manic sort of state, his stories just go way the hell off the page, and I don't know where he's going, and I don't find it particularly interesting. I tried to read Flex Mentallo, and I gotta say, I wasn't impressed.
Okay, I really like Flex.
There we go.
Okay, Doom Patrol was the first Morrison stuff I ever read, and I really like that. The Invisibles, I love The Invisibles. I have that in trades as well as the sloppies. It's such a cool book, I really love that.
Can you explain the ending to me?
Can I explain the ending? No. Of course not. But no, it's been a while since I read it, but no, I don't know, it was just a book that it set itself aside, whether or not it was because I was expecting stuff from Doom Patrol to show up and by The Invisibles was a book I really liked. The Batman run he did, even though it ended oddly, I don't know if you can completely give that to Morrison or the fact they tried to fit it in with Ultimate Crisis, or was it Ultimate Crisis, what was it called?
Final Crisis,
yeah. If they tried to fit it in with Final Crisis, with Batman dying and all that malarkey and all that stuff. His Superman run in New 52, I must say, hasn't been great, or wasn't great as it is, it's now over with. But there was stuff in it that was interesting. I'm really looking forward to Multiversity more than anything else.
Is that still happening?
As far as we know, it's apparently so, and you know, if only for the sake of the world with the Question and Blue Beetle in it, which would be really awesome. So
I want Blue Beetle back so much.
Yeah,
get him back.
Yes, there is. If you read Lex Luthor villain's book, it's got Ted Kord's dad in it.
Yep.
Oh really?
Yes. So we have potential Blue Beetle nest on the horizon. We wouldn't be lucky for that.
I was trying to explain this to Walt the other day. We were talking about the 90s, the late 80s, early 90s Justice League, the Giffen, DeMatteis, McGuire thing, and he's never read it. And I was trying to explain to him that it's a must read, even though if you don't like DC, this is the best Justice League you'll ever read, because it's the least DC of the Justice Leagues, and it's 99.9% everyone's favorite because of Blue and Gold. Booster and Beetle are just so good together, and they wrote them so well that it's just, I'm rereading the whole series right now, and I forgot how much fun this was.
Yeah, that is a good run right there.
First ever DC books I picked up were the JLE and JLA books,
You know, it's kind of funny that happened in the middle of the Iron Age.
Yeah, it was a great response to the Iron Age, though. I think that was the best part of it. It was people going, screw it, let's have some fun, as opposed to constantly, you know, just being, ugh. I mean, I was reading the trade, and they have this great sort of intro piece written about how it all came together, and talking about how, you know, comedy wasn't the writer's force strength, and then they had to go get a special letterer who could actually fit all those words onto a page because he wrote too much, and it was either trim it for brevity or let the joke carry, and they often chose just to let the joke carry because the jokes were that good, and that humor, I think, really revitalized. I know for me, as a gamer at the time, between that and Peter David's X Factor, those were probably the most two defining series on my group of players, because they just loved it and it felt most like a bunch of players sitting around being superheroes.
Yeah, that's an awfully good conceit for a comic book. I wonder why no one's ever done that.
What do you mean?
Well, kind of like the gentleman did in that one of their Dorkness Rising videos, where you had some guys sitting around cracking jokes role playing, and then you would cut back to the scene in game.
Oh, the gamers, you mean?
Yeah, the gamers, yeah.
Yeah. Gamers 2 is amazing. I love that movie so much.
Something else you know with the superhero genre. Of course, superhero is kind of it's the smaller RPG genre, after fantasy role-playing. But it'd be kind of cool to see something, a story told that way.
Is it number 3 now, really, I think, at the end of the run? I mean, it's fantasy, horror, and then supers now, isn't it?
Cthulhu's awfully big these days.
That's what I say. So the horror would be number 2 behind fantasy.
Yeah, I think sci-fi is trailing behind there somewhere.
I don't know if I would say sci-fi is over superheroes now. I think probably maybe they're in a neck and neck for third. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. Although it's, I mean, you can compare book sales over, you know, it's with how people are actually running games at home. But yeah, a whole lot of super systems out there these days.
So. Whole lot. Too many.
Well, the interest in sci-fi games is definitely up, especially with a lot of the stuff that's coming out, and interest in stuff like Dawningstar going over to Fate, and a lot of stuff like that. You see, there's definitely a resurgence in the interest in sci-fi games and stories as well.
What the hell's going on? Who's having a firefight?
What are you talking about?
That wasn't me. That might have been one of the other guys.
Wasn't me, man.
I'm looking at you, Laugh. I'm looking at you.
Breakfast burritos, man. I got nothing else to say. I'm glad you're in Canada right now.
Hey, I'm glad I'm in Canada every day, brother. Okay, so let's do this then. Let's start with Mike and work our way around. Mike, who's your current favorite superhero writer, and what's your current favorite book?
I'm going to have to go with Mark Waid on Daredevil. It's just been a lot of fun. It's kind of like he's taking a tour of the Marvel Universe, working with a bunch of guest stars. He had Silver Surfer in the issue before last. And it's, you know, the Mark Waid dialogue. It's a fun book. He's kind of, I hate to keep using the word fun, but he's bringing some levity back to Daredevil. And also, I don't know who the artist is. I'd look that up real fast. But the page design is just incredible. It's
great
to read. And oh my god, who the hell is the guy writing Hawkeye right now?
Matt Fraction.
That has been a fun book. I mean, it's almost not a superhero book. It's almost comedy / pulp. But
yeah,
that's been a lot of fun, too.
I agree on that. Aid, what are you reading these days? Who do you like, and what's your faves?
You know what? I really have no idea. I read an awful lot of books, and 95% of the time, I don't even pay attention to who's writing them. Because I tend to go for the characters and then kind of do it that way rather than the writers. Because like you said before, writers, when they're good, they're good. When they're bad. And I don't give everyone a free pass. If something looks interesting, then I'll go for it. I am enjoying The Hulk at the moment, which is also written by Waid. And that's been a decent run. I'm a big Hulk fan. I passed up on the last run because I didn't like the look of the artwork. So oddly enough, Silver Street, which is funny because he was the guy who went for X-Men. The Hulk stuff's really good. It's tough. I buy so many DC books. I really like Animal Man. I'm really liking Swamp Thing. They kind of tie into each other quite a lot all the while. But they have a rotating artist team all the while. And I think it's Lemire doing doing Animal Man at the moment. I can't really remember. But yeah, all good stuff. I can tell you what I'm really not enjoying. just for my interest. Fantastic Four is bugging the shit out of me at the moment. Okay. It's my favourite Marvel team, and I really, really want to like it. Last two issues, I've literally read two pages into and just chucked them aside because they just pissed me off so much.
Is that because Hickman left?
The Hickman run was fantastic. I loved the Hickman run. This one, they've got a central concept of a storyline about the Fantastic Four's powers going all wacky, but every single issue basically seems to be like a standalone storyline. There doesn't seem to be, every so often I go, oh, your powers have gone a bit dodgy today, and there'll be like one pan out of the entire comic. And after a year, I mean, they said at the beginning, like the very first issue had them little caption saying, 12 months into the future kind of thing, and they were all apparently back in the cosmic ray storm, and it's been a year and we haven't seen any of that. It's just seems to be what kind of crazy concepts can I put into the Fantastic Four, but no continuity. I can't see the continuity in it. It really bugs the hell out of me, and I really love the Fantastic Four, so
fair enough.
Let the book go. I can't let go because I've done that before. I did that with X-Men when Onslaught came along. I did that with X-Men when Age of Apocalypse came along, and everything next. Oh, okay, and then you end up going back and buying more. So I won't let the damn book go in case something really good happens. But at this moment in time, I resent buying the bloody book.
Yeah, I can have a brief sidebar. Hey, you're a big Hulk fan.
I'm a big Hulk fan.
You been watching Agents of Smash?
No.
Okay.
We don't get over here.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. I'm dubious. for the simple fact that I was dubious at the end of not the last Hulk run, the previous Hulk run, because there were so many bloody Hulks running around, and I just wanted to dilute the brand. I don't like Red Hulk. I don't like Red Hulk for the simple fact that he is Thunderbolt Ross. If he was another character, fine, but the him being Thunderbolt Ross just does not ring true for me. It's shit out of me. I'm quite looking. They've apparently got a She-Hulk series on the horizon, which is interesting. So we'll see what happens with that. But that might go the way of the old kind of comedy side pass. Yeah, there's sideline stuff rather than actual superhero stuff. I don't really know. But
okay.
Too many Hulks. One Hulk. One big green Hulk. No other Hulks, please.
One Hulk to rule them all.
Exactly. We only need one Hulk. That's my rant over.
Aide, what do you think about the rumors that Angie Harmon, the actress, has been shopping around for somebody to do a She-Hulk movie or TV show and that she could star in it?
Okay. She-Hulk TV series. I don't know what... TV series just bugged the crap out of me. I know we were going to talk about S.H.I.E.L.D. at some point. I quite like S.H.I.E.L.D. Everything else, I'm not very impressed with. So I'd get the feeling that we'd go back to the Lou Ferrigno days, and that would just here we go.
Did you see the promo image that she did?
No, I've not seen anything new.
She did a promo image to say that, you know, hey, I'd be great at She-Hulk, of her like hitting the ground, and the ground, she obviously found a crack in the sidewalk and turned herself green. And probably Photoshop or something like that. But I just thought it was interesting that here's this actress that has done like Law and Order, and now she's got her own show on TNT, and she wants to be the She-Hulk.
Okay, so if she's done Law and Order, does that mean we're going to get lawyer Jennifer Walters rather than superhero Jennifer Walters?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, the entire concept of it's like, hey, I can be in the boardroom and be green.
Well, yeah. You know, if you want to do a show with mainstream appeal, there might be a way to do it.
But why waste the character? That's what annoys me. This is what bugs me about the DC shows, about small villain thingy. It's like Green Arrow. See, I can't even name the damn show because it bugs the shit out of me so much. They waste the opportunity to go, hey, superheroes, let's do superheroes. Okay, right, we're not actually going to give them any powers. Okay, so we're going to introduce these characters that have got the same names as superheroes, but they're not really the characters, so they've got nothing to do. That annoys me. So a She-Hulk show where she just stands around going, ah, got you off that court case, didn't I? Well done. What's the point of having that? What is the point?
Well, I mean, listen, let's jump right into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. then. It seems to be the general consensus amongst the fan base is that it's a smash hit. Wow, it's amazing. I'm not feeling that. I watched it three times, and to isolate what I don't like about it, and what I've realized is one, they're way too pretty. It's ridiculous. Like, this, I'm supposed to believe this girl lives in a van? Really?
Yeah, that's what it
is. Come on. You know, she's so cute and perky. It's like a Alicia Dushku light or something. And I'm not really a fan of it. And my biggest problem with it is it feels small. It doesn't feel grand. It doesn't feel epic. It feels really tiny. The best way I can describe it is it looks like, I know it wasn't, but it looks like it was shot in Vancouver or Toronto. It has that feeling to it, you know? Not
well,
working.
It probably was.
No,
it probably was shot. Oh, was it really?
Yeah, shot in L.A.
Huh.
But not really, no, Joss doesn't shoot anywhere but L.A., his thing. But it doesn't matter for me because I'm just not, the flying car was great, thank you so much, that was such a great nod, but can I see superheroes? Can I see the Marvel Universe? Can I see how S.H.I.E.L.D., as super spies, deals with that world as opposed to, wow, it felt like Marvel CSI, meh.
I think they're going to... I don't know. It felt like a Joss Whedon show to me. I didn't get a lot of chemistry between the team members. Maybe that'll come later. It kind of seemed like he was distracted. Sort of like the later seasons of Buffy, where Joss would kind of come in every once in a while, but really kind of didn't feel like his stamp on it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I imagine what they're going to do is do Monsters of the Week, you know, for most of your episodes. Then you'll have something bigger and grander the last two or three episodes of every season. It's kind of the pattern for Angel and Buffy. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't a bad TV show that featured superheroes, and that's rare enough by itself that I was happy about that. But, it didn't really blow my hair back tremendously. I don't know if I get the wife to watch it again, so, you know, there's that too.
DC, you've been quiet for a while. What'd you think about it?
you know, it was okay. I kind of enjoyed it, but I was walking into it not really having any massive expectations. Mm-hmm. I think the thing I'd like to see in the long run with a S.H.I.E.L.D. program is I'd like to see recognizable S.H.I.E.L.D. characters for comic book fans, like maybe Clay Quartermain, you know, or the Contessa. Dum Dum Dugan would be nice to show up.
Yeah, Dum Dum Dugan, yeah.
You know, I think Dum Dum Dugan would be a perfect character for them to answer to, since they're not going to be able to get Kobe Smulders there to play Maria Hill all the time. But we'll see what happens. I mean,
but they took him away in the Captain America movie.
Yeah, there could be another one. You know, it could be his grandson. It could be his granddaughter, like they did in one of the alternate universes.
Now, that would be funny, having some big burly sort of Irish Scottish chick that they call Dum Dum. I would die laughing if they did that.
You know, her name could be Darlene Dugan, and they call her Dum Dum for short.
Yeah, that would work. I just think they should make them less pretty. Like, I really just it was like, wow, I'm watching models pretend to be spies. Whatever, you know. It just, I don't know. It bothered me, I guess. Obviously.
I'm just waiting for beekeeper outfits, man. That's all I want. I'm a big fan of AIM, you know?
I'm hoping AIM is the big bad guy. I really am. So,
all right, Mike.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we were talking about what people are reading. DT, what are you reading these days?
Let's see. I read the titles I really can't live without. I like All New X-Men, which surprises me because I really didn't care for Bendis other than Ultimate Spider-Man. I hated his Avengers run, but I love what he's doing in All the X-Men. I really like Hickman's Avengers. That's just been a fantastic title. I'm a big New Universe nerd, and the more he keeps putting into that, the more I'll keep reading it. And I really like Hester on Invincible Universe. I just something about that comic book. It's the character they have in there called Best Tiger is by far one of my very favorite characters in comic books recently.
I haven't heard. What is this thing? I haven't heard about it.
It's a spinoff of the comic Invincible, mm-hmm. where you have the Guardians of the Globe, the Actioneers, the Astounding Wolfman. It's all kind of compiled into this one book that Todd Knock illustrates with Phil Hester writing, and it's different storylines throughout the thing. And one of the characters in Guardian of the Globe, who is from Hong Kong, is this guy called Best Tiger, who puts on a blindfold every time he goes into the field. Not because he's blind, but because he's looking for a challenge. And I absolutely love the character. I mean, you get other characters like Kaboomerang, and, you know, it's Kirkman's usual fare of like, kind of weird characters, but fun characters.
Oh, I'll have to give that a look. I haven't heard that before. That's
Sorry, what's it called?
Invincible Universe.
Oh, yeah. So I get my Invincibles as the Ultimate Collection, so I get, like, one lot of Invincibles every 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a little mini Christmas. It's lovely. So I'm looking for way into the collect it, and then I will be getting that book. Because everything else, the Invincible stuff. As soon as I collect it, I buy it because that's just really cool to go and get it. I find so.
You know, it's not superhero, but the other book that I've been really enjoying is a comic called Five Ghosts. It was kickstarted by a guy called the writer on it, Frank Barbary. That's been a really fun comic. It's different. It's very pulp, but it has almost like a superhero angle because he's possessed by five literary ghosts. So he has like Dracula, Robin Hood, Sherlock Holmes, Merlin, and I cannot remember the samurai's name right now. But it's been just a fantastic read. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, cool. Hey, Walt, how about you? What are you reading these days?
I'm kind of like on a husband and wife kick right now. I'm reading, I really love Fraction's run on Hawkeye. Yeah. I geek out on any series that features, you know, a guy who's kind to a dog. And he's got that dog he rescued off the street and, you know, constantly just feeding it pizza. But, I mean, it's just something about that run that just, it doesn't take really the superhero bit out of it. It brings it down to the street so us mere mortals can appreciate it more. I'm also reading his wife, Kelly Sue DeConnick's run on Ghost. I loved Ghost back in the 90s when they first unveiled it, and she's kind of resurging the character back into not only into the mainstream, but also making it relatable to a modern audience by having her initially discovered by a bunch of ghost hunters trying to produce a show. So, I mean, it's fun, it's quirky, but it still has that kind of, like, supernatural noir feel. And then just because I'm a pretty much a rabid Top Cow junkie, I'm really enjoying Cyberforce right now. I think they had something when they launched it through Kickstarter and then made enough to release the first five issues to the fans for free. So I'm just going to keep following it for a little while, see where it pans out.
Cool. Andrew, so how about you?
Yeah. Well, let's see. I'm still loving Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm not a fan of Bendis otherwise, but I really think that is his raison d'etre. You know, he's really good at it. It's an exciting comic. I love Miles Morales. I love the rumor that they're going to destroy the Ultimate Universe and somehow port Miles Morales over to the 616, which is fine. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. Otherwise, there's not a lot of stuff I'm really, really, really into these days. The new stuff, in fact, I find myself going over old comics a lot more and reading stuff from when I was younger and seeing if it held up because, frankly, I don't know, man. It's just, I don't like where modern comics are going. I'm not enjoying the new 52. I don't enjoy Marvel's we've got 18 different crossovers going at one time mentality. It's not for me.
Yeah. We're going to talk about event books, but I can see exactly where you're coming from. I've got the two Stanley Kirby Fantastic Four omnibuses on order for when they come out in October, November, but I'm looking forward to them more than anything that's been put out by other people. So,
you know, one of the things that Marvel did when back around 2006, 2007, and I remember it because I was in Iraq and I was like, holy crap, I got to find some bandwidth to do this. They launched their streaming on demand for their comic line, you know, and they had basically scanned thousands of comics and had it at your fingertips. And I mean, when you look back at all those old series and you want to get, you know, a big chunk of them right pretty much when you want them, for like $5-6 a month, oh my God, I was hooked. The fact that I can go back and read old Avengers stories, old Captain America stories, from pretty much all the way back in through the 60s, I thought that was a pretty neat thing. And now they have it so that you can stream it on your mobile device. So, you know, I mean, we've all had that minute where, you know, I've had that minute a lot where, you know, you've broken something and you're in the hospital or the doctor's office waiting, and you're just like, you're looking at the same six magazines, and you know you're going to be there for a while. I mean, you know, to have a nice big phone and you pop up, you know, an entire run of your favorite creator right there, I thought that was huge.
Yeah. I should say there's a new comic that's not out yet, but it's coming, that I'm really enjoying reading about and seeing what's developing. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's called Heroic, and it's written by this really, I think, assumed to be a bright light in the industry writer. I won't say his name because that would be, you know, a little nepotism on my part, but yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And are we going to get that on digital subscription?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I fully intend to blanket every form of deployment I can do on this to make sure it gets in enough hands, you know?
Speaking of shamelessly promoting our own work, aren't you guys involved in the Super Kickstarter as well?
The what?
I've heard a rumor about that, but I'm not going to confirm or deny.
Well, since you're kind of the point man of that, well, any of our readers who might not know what Supers is, why don't you give me the elevator pitch?
Well, 2010, you had... you know, funny enough, a fellow British citizen, Mr. Simon Washburn, and he created a narrative-style superhero role-playing game that had a simplified mechanic and the ability to learn the rules in minutes and then play for hours and hours and hours. So we liked it, and... Andrew threw the Jedi mind trick on me, and we approached Simon and said, "Hey, you know, we really want to take over the license, take over the property from you." So After some careful negotiation, we picked it up, and now we're in Kickstarter to create the revised edition. And basically, the game really didn't need a lot. It just needed some extras that we wanted to see in there. And we put those in there so that the game would have not only the quick, snappy punch that it had to really bring that superhero feel to the table, but also so that it had a little more depth to it, so that fans of more numbers-heavy games could come in too and enjoy it. You know, and when our writers are doing it in a way that's not taking away from the narrative style of the game. So when you play the Supers Revised Edition, you're getting a whole lot of bang for your buck. And in fact, we believe that so much that we put our initial buy-in at $1, so that you know, you come in for $1. You know, it's very low risk. At $1, you get the rules. You get right away. You get basically a playtest document. We're doing a whole bunch of backer bonuses, basically freebies to the fans, saying, "Hey, you know, thanks for believing in this. Here's some free stuff." That way, not only do you get the rules, but you're also getting ready-made creator content to play with it, so that you can drive this thing till the wheels fall off. Let us know what's wrong. Let us know what works. And at the $5 level and above, you have the ability to provide feedback. We've already incorporated two rounds of that. We're hopefully going to be releasing the second iteration of the manuscript today, and then we'll. Andrew just launched a huge character from the Zenith Universe to our backers yesterday. Everybody at $1 or higher got that. So, I mean, we're having a lot of fun with it. The fans have been great. A lot of feedback coming through our feedback site, as well as through the Yahoo group that we set up to kind of give the backers a private place to talk about it. And it's just been a wild ride so far.
Let me jump in. I want to pimp this a little bit more. When we made the announcement that we were taking over the license from Simon, there was some hesitation amongst the existing Supers fans that it was going to be the Zenith Universe role-playing game, and I can tell you nothing is further from my mind. In fact, the only game I will ever make the Zenith Universe role-playing game is if I ever get around to doing a clone of the Marvel Super Heroes game, revised, but from the 80s, the old MSH phase rip, I think is what most people call it now. That would be it for me. But one of the things Walt and I agreed on when we started this project was that I was going to be releasing villains for people to use in the playtest or in their games as we go along. And so far we've put out four. Sawayne and Shay, She, which are two Irish, Celtic-y, sort of Halloween-themed villains that are a lot of fun. And then this week we've put out Cinderbell, which is the one he was just talking about. She's brass, man. She's awesome. I love that character so much. And we have another one coming named Animax. And then I'm also working on two more that one should be coming out later in the week, hopefully if I get all the writing done, called Sir Blood, which is a vampiric knight. And later we're going to have a few more coming in. We've got about 12 of them planned for the whole run. But what I really want to pimp about it is that I don't care if you like my writing. I don't care if you think they're great characters. That's your business. That's your choice. You do what you want with that. It's Anthony Green, who had done the original supervillains work for me for when I released Zenith Comics Presents Supervillains a couple years ago, came back out to do this. And in this case, what I said to him was, I said, you know what? I made a mistake telling you to go for the more animated style. Do it in your style. And I got to say, these characters just look fantastic. If nothing else, if you've bought in at $1 and you're getting these character updates, you now have a piece of art. Throw out the backstory. Throw out the stats I built. Don't care. Call it something else, but you have a fantastic looking character that you can adapt to anything.
Sweet. So what's the goal and where are you guys at now?
Right now we're sitting at just under 5,300. We have 11 days to go. We've gone through our first stretch goal, and which was a set of tactical rules by Dave Bezio. And he goes by the name of Grubman on a lot of the forums and does a lot of game reviews, does a video show about game reviews. He did a great set of tactical rules. We've already inserted them into the revision. The backers should be getting that tonight. And then the next goal was the art explosion. So we're basically going to be harping and jumping all over the artists we've recruited to include two members of this panel today. And we're going to be, you know, just once the book is funded, we're going to just throw down the hammer and say, this is what we want to see. Let's see your take on it. And spill ink on the page. Let's go. So we're at the art explosion now. The next stretch goal is going to be a Super's Adventure by Darren Ballmer, a.k.a. Mansur Bear. And he's agreed to do some come out of retirement for us and do some art as well. So we have an amazing team, an amazing set of people involved in this. There's some guy, Mike Lafferty. I heard he was good with Kickstarter, so we brought him along to keep me in line. I mean, we just the sheer breadth of the talent that has come out to support us is not only overwhelming, it's also kind of humbling because, you know, here we thought we were just these two guys that really love superheroes, and it just turned out that everybody really loves superheroes and have come out to help.
Oh, sweet. And we'll put a link up to the Kickstarter. Is there another stretch goal you guys are aiming for? You're at a goal of like 4,000. You're 5,800 right now?
We're at 132% funding. The next, just to correct something Walt said, not to correct Walt often because I'm afraid of him, the next goal is actually the alternate digital cover. We have the first cover we did, which was everyone that bought in, there's 10 characters you bought in to have your character on the cover. That was a great hit for us. But we have an alternate digital cover coming by a super secret, not yet to be revealed artist who will blow you all away. Then we're going to have the Super's Adventure by Darren. Should we push back past then, some hack named Andrew Collis is going to write a couple of source books if that works out. And then the massive goal is the $10,000 goal. If we hit that, the book will be printed with a hardcover option available.
Sweet. And now, Abe, you're involved in this too, aren't you?
I believe I am. Yes, I should hopefully be finding some work for it, so keep funding it. I want to do more things.
Abe needs to keep buying comics by British writers. Please fund him.
I need more comic money. Yes, I will be doing some artwork, so that's very cool. Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing how we're going to go. So,
okay.
Well, not only is he doing a lot of the artwork, he's also going to be helping us with layout as well. So, we're gonna see how many hats we can get him to wear, and then see if we can take a picture of it.
Yes, definitely need the special backer picture of Abe wearing 8 different hats.
I can send some of mine over.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you have a hat collection. Yeah,
it's a sad thing for a heterosexual man to admit, but yes, I do.
So we're also excited that we were able to grab DT to possibly do some of the backer illustrations for us. So. His line, Acts of Villainy, over on Zion Press, gets a lot of love, definitely from us. I'm a huge fan, so we were excited to have him jump on board as well.
100% back that statement.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
a man of few words. I would say his pencil is strong, but that would take this podcast in a whole nother direction.
I don't like it.
Well, hey guys, unfortunately I have to work for a living and I'm getting that close to 1 o'clock mountain. I gotta go jump on a conference call and talk about synergizing towards the corporate objectives and hitting the bottom line.
Thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
So before we wrap it up, anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, make sure everybody goes out and buys Improbable Tales Volume 1 on RPG Now.
While you're at it, pick up at least one of the Acts of Villainy on RPG Now as well.
Yep.
Yes, and especially then, the next issue, because we put a lot of work into it.
Send Abe Smith a hat as soon as possible. Yes. Address will be in the show notes.
Well, hey, DT, that's I'm not terribly familiar with your Acts of Villainy. Are those short products featuring one villain, or what exactly are those?
Well, the Acts of Villainy solo are usually one villain. You also do an Acts of Villainy team, which usually, up till now, has been more or less organizations that happens within the universe that I'm using. And we also do masterminds and specials. Masterminds are kind of like a solo villain, but a little more oomph to it. And the specials usually like have to do with an event. We released Game Show, I believe, as our first special to celebrate GM's Day. And we have 43 issues, I think it is, of solo that are out. And we're doing our fourth team issue, which will be out Wednesday, which features a villainous organization known as the Pentacle of Shadows.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice little magic sort of Halloween-y sort of bad guys.
If you're a fan of Mutants and Masterminds, you definitely need to pick these up because they're not your everyday superheroes, but they could be.
Yep.
I would say, to my mind, the Acts of Villainy characters, much like everything from Zion, including the Watchguard stuff as well, just to sort of pimp that as well, because I think it's great stuff.
Definitely.
The closest I've seen to anyone else doing the same kind of stuff I'm trying to do with the Zenith universe. And I don't care if I don't care if you think highly of me or lowly of me, but for me, that's a huge thumbs up because I'm a snot when it comes to superheroes, a complete snob. And to see someone else thinking the way I do or in that same vein makes me very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and shit, one last thing I wanted to add about the Supers Kickstarter. My bad on that. Walt, we are going to be running, I'm going to be running, if you want to see what kind
That's
of a
right.
Referee I am, I'm going to be running three different sessions via Skype or Google Hangouts or whatever for backers who want to be a part of it. We're going to just make it, you know, if we get enough people that we have to pick names, we pick names. If we don't, we go with who applied, called Super Brawl. And this will be using the revised edition rules, and it's going to be not your standard sort of adventure. It's going to be something more trash and bash, kick the wheels, driver hard, test the gears, grind them if we can't find them. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you like the sound of my voice and you think I might be a fun guy to game with, jump in. What's the minimum level for that, Walt? Was it the $5 or $10 we said?
$5.
Let's jump in at the $5 level. Let us know in the comments that you want to be thrown in for consideration for one of the games. We're going to do three sessions of it, and hopefully they're going to be a lot of fun.
It's the most fun you can have outside of Las Vegas for $5, folks, so definitely jump in.
Dirty.
And we need to get you guys in the podcast to do a Supers demo at some point, because I'd like to actually play this game.
Well, you set it up, we'll knock it down.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
Well, cool. Hey, anything else you want to chip in on before we wrap it up?
I don't believe so. I think everything's pretty well covered here.
Alright,
I'm looking forward to working with everybody.
Mike, would you mind if I pimped my upcoming new podcast?
What? No,
what?
Rival podcast?
He's cheating on you, Mike. He's cheating on you.
Okay, that's okay.
I will ask that well, actions there. No, there aren't enough podcasts to cover superheroes and gaming, so I'm glad to have one more. Because as I said before, it grows weary sitting on this throne of supers.
This throne of hats.
King by my own hand.
Nice.
Where's the crown? No, please, pimp away, sir. I'm all here.
Well, what we're doing is I used to run a podcast, which Mike knows and some of you may have listened to, called Zenith Comics Presents the Podcast. That one focused mostly on superhero gaming and talking specifically to the creators of superhero games, not about gaming itself, but about what they were, who they were, getting to know them. That was a hit or miss, depending on how you want to look at it. But I am super stoked to say, probably at the end of November, beginning of December, we're going to record the first episode of the Four Color Cafe, and your hosts are going to be myself, Mr. Walt Robillard, and geek actress, genre girl extraordinaire, Jen Page. And we're going to have a rotating fourth guest host every time, probably about once a month, and it should be a lot of fun. And we're going to have Laugh on at some point. We're going to have DT on at some point. Might have Aid on at some point,
please,
and a
please.
Few other names. So certainly keep an eye out for that when it comes.
Excellent. So basically that's just before the end of the year, TBD kind of thing?
Sort of thing, yeah.
All right, cool. Looking forward to that. I don't know, are you going to do like the whole radio studio production thing, or are you doing it over Skype like we are?
We're going to be doing it over Skype. Unfortunately, the radio studio I had free access to back for the old one, They move to a new location. They combine four radio stations into one location, so there's never any free production booth time now. So I can't do what I was doing, which was stealing millions of dollars of equipment to make a high-quality production. So we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, roll up the sleeves, get in there, and have a lot of fun. You make it look like a piece of piss, so I figure it must be easy. Oh, sorry. Piece of piss for the Americans listening, that means good. It means easy, not a hard thing to do.
Good thing you're here to translate.
In the UK, it means exactly the same. So yeah,
exactly. That's the thing. So I figured Abe would understand that. But the rest of you might think, what? This podcast is not piss? No, it's not. It's the dog's balls, actually. It's quite lovely, and I love it.
Oh, you guys and your colorful colloquialisms. You kids these days with your flivvers and your hootenanny.
You members of the British Commonwealth with your fancy talking.
And your U's. Everything has a U in it.
Damn Skippy. It's called English. Learn to spell it.
Okay, on that happy note, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast, and we will catch you next time.